Welcome into the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballengee. It's great to have you with us. Sorry for the multi-week delay, probably 2.5 weeks without a podcast, but thanks for tuning into the program. We have a good show for you, I think, with some topics that come out of the PGA Merchandise Show where I was last week in Orlando. You can email the show or email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Check us out on our website, golfnewsnet.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at those respective web addresses, /golfnewsnet, or you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/ryanballengee. The theme of the PGA show is almost always kind of this idea of enthusiasm about the potential for the game to grow and the potential for businesses to grow there within it. And on Tuesday night, there was kind of an interesting stake in the ground planted by Mark King, who's the TaylorMade Adidas Golf CEO. Ted Bishop, who is the current president, he's going to be the outgoing president in November of the PGA of America, and Joe Bettis from the National Golf Foundation. And they spent well over an hour introducing a concept that really didn't get totally codified and still isn't, frankly, at the end. And it's this notion that we've lost golfers. We had 30 million golfers maybe at the start of last decade, thereabouts. And now we're kind of in the 25 million golfer range. And the fear is that the number will continue to go lower to a certain point where it will bottom out probably. But that is obviously a trend that the golf industry wants to reverse. And everybody was the PGA show was in the business of golf, so obviously it affects their bottom line if the trend does not reverse. And so the idea put forth by King, Bishop, Bettis, and others is that golf needs some degree of revitalization. And King's example was the idea that snowboarding saved skiing and that it has revolutionized how people perceive the sport of skiing as well as snowboarding being an invented one, and that both have prospered because of the invention of the sport of snowboarding. And maybe that's true, whatever. But I don't know that it's a proper analogy to what's happening in golf. Nevertheless, that was what King was making use of as his jumping off point for this idea of hack golf. H-A-C-K golf, all one word. And hack golf is this idea of ideas, where it is basically an ask me anything on Reddit for the sport of golf. Ask and ye shall receive. And the idea is to provide a web community and a social media campaign to ask people who play the game of golf, who don't play the game of golf, who might be interested in playing the game of golf, who may never pick up a club. What might make the sport more interesting for people who don't play it? What might make lapsed players or people who used to play it or play more often? And what will keep players who are already in that core group, as they're labeled, who play 8 or more times a year, to play at least that often, if not more? And what will happen with these ideas as they're solicited, they'll be voted on and commented on through the Hack Golf website, which you can check out. And then eventually, online collaborative teams will get together and decide winners and losers. And those winners will be funded, at least some of them, by a $5 million commitment that TaylorMade Golf has made over the next 5 years. Now, that is an absolute pittance of money compared to what TaylorMade brings in each year via the sales of equipment and its Adidas and Ashworth apparel lines, as well as the Adams company. It's not that much money at all, to be absolutely frank with you. It's a side project, and it's treated as such. And TaylorMade announced at the PGA show that they were committing $1.5 million, or just under 40% of the money, up front. And they were committing them to two ideas. One, experimenting with the notion of a 15-inch cup at a variety of facilities that have been engaged on that idea and excited about it. And they'll do that over some period of time to see what the feedback is. And then they're also going to be introducing what they're labeling a curious new game, where they're going to be coming out with non-conforming, almost Star Trek equipment that the golfer might be able to use to have a little bit easier of a time hitting a slightly bigger ball and seeing if they can then transition to the sport of golf, or maybe they just keep playing this sport. And there was also some talk during the presentation about perhaps some backing of foot golf, which is essentially soccer on a golf course, I think is a interesting idea. And in full disclosure, my new employer, Billy Casper Golf, has an interest in promoting the game at two of its courses in the state of Virginia. And I think I like the concept, and I liked it even before I got with Billy Casper Golf. And then there's some interest, I think, in propping up Topgolf, which is actually a British company that made its way over the United States, offering driving ranges that game the notion of golf on this limited space, this limited real estate, and they serve food and drinks and beer and liquor, and they've tried to socialize the game, and it really is an excellent experience. And these are the kinds of ideas that they want to get behind. They want to get behind, I guess, out of the box thinking. And I think the initial visceral reaction from everybody in the room was, this is it? This is your idea to save golf? Because I think people who are sitting in that audience, and I don't know how many hundreds of people there were expecting to be told the answer. This, A, B, or C, is how we save golf. And if you follow us, we're going to win. And instead they got, actually, we feel the answer is not up on this stage with four old white guys, but rather lies in the audience with you or the broader audience of this sport or even still outside of this sport. And maybe all of that's accurate. But my takeaway among many was that there needed to be a little bit more leadership on the topic. And you could kind of get the sense afterward and throughout the remainder of the show that there was a little bit of hedging going on from the folks at TaylorMade Adidas Golf, that if the idea doesn't work, if it doesn't produce an answer, if it doesn't result in an uptick in participation in whatever hybrid sport they create or the sport of golf itself, that at least they tried. And sure, there's plenty of kudos to go around for having the conversation. But we've been having this conversation in this sport about improving participation for 15 years, even before participation started to begin to drop. But the reality is that the number of golfers that came into the game in the boom of the 90s and really stopped right around the end of Tiger Slam, most of them can be represented as the golfers that are leaving or probably will leave the game of golf. They are probably completely different. It's basically probably a one-to-one replacement of players that came along in that boom and players that are leaving now that came along in the game in the 60s and 70s, thanks to the influence of Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, the middle classification of the game, if you will, the Gary Players of the world, all of those factors that drove up golf participation in the first place, in the middle half of the 20th century. So you kind of had these two booms. They were about 30 to 40 years apart, which is about how long people tend to play the game of golf. Because realistically, most players who take up the game of golf don't do it like I did when I was 13. They do it when they're 30. And then they play 30 or 40 years until they're 60 or 70. And then for health reasons, disinterest, whatever it is, they stop playing golf. So you need to replace those golfers with the next generation. And you, in this case, had about a little over, basically two generations to replace. So every two, you have to replace those golfers, if you're going to keep at that pace. So what happened was we picked up all these golfers, but we lost the ones that we picked up a generation or two prior. So what golf has to do is, again, pick up another generation of golfers if they want to keep growing. And I just don't think that's possible. I really don't think fundamentally we will get back another 5 million golfers that the sport has lost. I don't think we're going to wind up at this number, 25 million, even a decade from now. I think realistically, we're looking at 20 million golfers in the United States. But I don't think it's the raw number that we should be interested in. And this is something that's kind of come to me in the last couple of days after I've been thinking about it, being home from the show. And we could talk about real estate. We could talk about the nature, how golf is delivered, its rules, its traditions, and all of that. as the reasons why people don't stick with or take up golf in the first place. There's a series of podcasts on this topic we could do, but the one thing that's kind of starting to stick out to me is this idea that we don't need lots of golfers. We don't need 50 million golfers. We need 10 to 15 million really committed golfers who love the game, who are passionate about it. The core golfer spends 80 to 90% of the money that comes in the game, that comes through the game, that makes this a ridiculously sized industry for a recreational sport. And so those are the golfers we have to appease. Those are the people that we need to boost the ranks of. We don't need 10 million more people who buy one set of clubs, who go to the range twice, who play three times, and never play again. And we just call them a lapsed golfer. I don't need somebody in the industry that pays one green fee a year or four green fees a year. That's not substantial enough to really warrant that kind of marketing attention. It just isn't. I'm going to be perfectly honest here. And so when I propose this idea that maybe it's okay that golf isn't as big as we want it to be, I'm trying to say that we could have as many casual golfers as we want, guys and girls who play 0 to 5 rounds a year, who will spend maybe a few hundo on a piece of equipment, a new putter, some balls to putt around their office or their home office, a couple of green fees a year because they want to get out of the house and have a little fun outdoors. But those people fundamentally aren't going to make golf subject to an economic boom. They're just not. So the mission has to be not how do we increase the number of golfers in the game, but how do we take the number of casual golfers, the people who have said they're interested in playing golf, and make them into hardcore golfers. It's not getting people in the door. It's getting them to keep coming through the door. And I think that's where I kind of feel like hack golf falls short. Because if you talk to golfers, the hardcore golfers, and I belong to a country club. It's a middle-class country club. I mean, these are people who are not born into golf. They took up golf. They got into the sport because something about it clicked to them. And they worked hard to be able to join a club like the one I'm looking at through my window, where people of modest means, or at least slightly better than modest means, could get together, play golf, and have some fun together. And I think that they feel the sport is festering because it does all those things that we have said it does or doesn't do, and those ills are that it is too expensive, it takes too long, and is too frustrating. Well, I think that there aren't as many people, if you kind of did the surveys of why people fit in a certain buckets, why they don't play or why they don't play more often or whatever. I think being a difficult sport to play, really wouldn't be the big driver of golfer loss. I truly do not believe that, because if that was the case, nobody would play golf, because there are very few people who can break 70. There are few people who can break 80. There are a decent number of people who can break 90 and 100. And there are plenty of people who still can't do that, and they still play the game. The game is incredibly difficult, and it's humbling, and you kind of have to hate yourself a little bit to play it. And so I don't think that fundamentally making the game easy is going to get people in the door. What you need to make easier is the onboarding process. We ask people who have never played the game or rarely play the game to show up to a facility, almost always in the suburbs, so it's miles away from where they typically live. We ask them to pay $40, $50 just to show up and maybe embarrass themselves. Probably another 10 or 15 or 20 on merch and practice supplies and golf balls. And then we ask them to dress a certain way, which costs money. We ask them to behave a certain way, which takes conscious thought and takes away from the fun of the game. And we ask them to assimilate. And then we say, thanks for coming. We'd love it if you come again. Unless you're a jerk, then we don't want to see you again. And there's always judging. So I'm not really sure that the culture of golf is all that inviting. It really isn't. You kind of have to make your way in the sport, which I think says a lot about why we have a lot of loners who play the game. The social culture of the game either comes from people that you already know that you took up the game with together, or you find your way into groups of people who are all kind of ones and twos and become eights and tens together. And I think that happens in my country club a lot. I think that happens with a lot of people who play the game, and a lot of people played exceptionally well. They got into it because either their parents got them into it, or it just resonated with them that it was their personal cathedral to play golf and their personal meditation site to be able to get better at the game. So what we're not doing effectively then is taking golf to the masses. We're really not doing that. I mean, products like Topgolf aside, which are great, and they invite people to come play the game, whether they know anything about it or not, because of the promise of beer being there before, during, and after. And so I think that what Hack Golf can do better than anything else is take the game of golf to people, to where people live, because we also have this enormous property problem to confront in the sport of golf. People are leaving the suburbs, young people at least, and it's going to continue that way for the foreseeable future, because there's a recognition that living in an urban environment is more exciting, more accessible, better overall than living in a suburb. And there are plenty of people who reject that notion, and I live in the suburbs. But that's where the people are. That's where the young people are going. That's where the next generation of golf is. And frankly, the way land use is heading and environmentalism dictates this, we're just simply not going to be able to have as many golf courses in urban areas as you will in suburbs and exurbs. So if you're going to get people to play the game of golf and come out to the suburbs or exurbs or take long trips and do that kind of thing, then you've got to be able to entice them where they are, which means you have to take golf to cities. And golf does a really crappy job of that. There are very few good urban golf programs. Most of them are junior/youth oriented. There are very few good urban golf programs dedicated to getting city dwellers with clubs in their hands. It's just the truth. So what golf and Hack Golf really can do for the sport of golf is to figure out a way to make the game accessible in an urban environment, so to the point that it drives people so crazy that they get out of the house and they don't go to the farmer's market on Saturday morning. They go to the golf course, which might have a farmer's market on it, which would be a great idea, but that's another podcast altogether. So my thinking is that it is not the conduit, or it's not the game. The game is as entertaining as ever. It really isn't all that. I mean, it's never been easier to hit a golf ball. Equipment is better than ever. Instruction is better than ever. We have a better understanding of the golf swing as a technical piece of athleticism. That we know all, so much more about the game than we did 20 years ago, much less 50 years ago. And that's good stuff to make it a little bit easier for the average person to at least get off the ground and running. But the question mark is, what do we have to do to get people to the ground so that they start running? And we go where the people are. We give them the proper message that we're not asking you to assimilate into the culture of golf, but that we hope to assimilate aspects of golf into broader culture. And I think you can kind of see it a little bit, especially in northern states. I had some great conversations with folks from Minnesota and Michigan, where there are more golfers per capita than anywhere else in the country, and they have the shortest golf season. But one thing that they do very, very well is have golf simulators. They have social components of the game without a physical golf course in front of them. And they use simulators. They use bubbles. They use things like Topgolf in season. They figured out how to make the sport of golf popular without having a lot of time and a lot of real estate always devoted to the game of golf. And I think that kind of model needs to come through to other parts of the country. where we can go to people and say, you can come to this facility. We'll call it the Urban Golf Club. And at the Urban Golf Club, you can play a simulated round of golf. You can get a lesson. You can get fit for clubs. You can practice. You can drink. You can smoke a cigar. You can have a great bottle of wine or a great meal. Or you can do none of that and just hang out. It could be a place where you can decide what level of interaction you want to have with the golf lifestyle. And it is a lifestyle, but the problem is that lifestyle comes with certain expectations. So what we need to be able to do as a sport is to present that lifestyle as a choice among many, weaving into the lifestyles that people have set up for themselves without judgment, without much expectation, and really just the hope that we can have a small piece of their attention span, because that's what people really don't have a lot of time for, giving more attention to things. It's just the way our society is. So we need to be able to provide an opportunity to play golf in a friendly setting where people are, in a time frame that people have, and connected to the way people live their lives already. If we do that as a sport, golf can grow. And by grow, I don't mean add 30 million more golfers. I mean add 2 million more core golfers, because that should be the goal. And that brings us back to the entire original point, the entire original thought on hack golf. What this sport does not need is 50 million golfers in the United States. It's unrealistic. And frankly, it'd be kind of annoying, because then that would lead to another real estate boom, another boom of golf course architecture. We already have way more golf courses than we need in this country. And that's why for the next decade or more, no matter what happens with hack golf or any kind of venture like it, there will be more course closures than openings. It's just going to be that way, because we overdid it. We overcooked it. And so I don't want golf to go through something like that again, just because all of a sudden surveys tell us that there are more people playing once, twice, three, or four times a year, and we count them as golfers, rather than not at all or once a year, and we don't count them as golfers. So what I want to happen is for a reduction of golf course supply, and we need to be able to take that supply and do whatever needs to be done with it for the betterment of society. Golf has tons of great green spaces, but those can be public space. They can be developed. I don't care. But we need to reduce the supply, and we need to take our current demand and twist it a little bit so that there are more people golf crazy who will go to the facilities that we have that are willing to pay the price points that make this game accessible but also profitable to sustain a very large industry. And let's hope that in 10 or 20 years, we can walk away with 23 or 24 million golfers in this country, and that of those 24 million, 10 to 12 million of them are avid golfers, are the core golfers, the people that spend the bulk of the money in this game today, because that's the way we're going to grow the pie. We're going to shrink it, and then we're going to grow it. And that, I think, is really what should be the goal for hack golf. I have no idea if anybody listening out there, be it who works for hack golf or is behind the concept, hears me out on this, or be you an average golfer, whether or not you even care that there's another damn golfer added to the roster. But I'd love to hear from you either way. And we're going to continue to talk about this topic for months to come, because there's so much great discussion that can be had about it. And it's not going to be just for me. We're going to have great people come on the program who I've either already had this conversation with or still want to have it with and hear what they think. So we'd love to hear from you. Email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Want to hear your thoughts on hack golf and growing the game of golf, and whether or not this is all just kind of one big business scam, if you want to say that, at Ryan Ballingy on Twitter. Check us out on Facebook and twitter.com/golfnewsnet. You can find our Golf News Net pages there. And also give a follow, as I give a special shout out to my new employer, Billy Casper Golf, @BillyCasperGolf. You can see a bunch of my work there. Really talking about the game that you and I play week to week and Sunday to Sunday over at BillyCasperGolf.com, and more to come on that front. Until next week, I'm Ryan Ballingy saying thanks so much for listening. And we'll talk to you next week on the 19th Hole Golf Show.